Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. My name is Becky Clark, and I'm Operations Manager at CRA Resources. Today, we're sitting down with Angela Roberts, Head of Recruiting, and special guest, Ruth Kelly. Ruth was an HR professional for one of our sponsor clients who behaved in the capacity of business partner and was our main point of contact with resourcing. So before we get started, make sure to visit craresources.com/blog to catch up on our latest blog posts. You can also sign up there to get this content delivered straight to your inbox. So I'll turn it over to Angela and she can give us more details for our topic today.
Super excited to have Ms. Ruth here to talk about this because I think it's so important. But, you know, one of the things that most of our clients don't do is have job descriptions. And I think it's an anomaly. I think a lot of times companies believe that job descriptions is just about advertising for the position. And what I want to do today is talk about how job descriptions can be and should be so much more of a company's business model. Any company that hires people should really do job descriptions. And what I thought we could do is kind of go from end to end on why it's so important to have one. So first things first, one of the things I love, and Ruth, you can help me with this as well, because I think you had mentioned once upon a time that you worked with a company that didn't do job descriptions either. But I love it when a company does a job description and it's really buttoned up, and you could sometimes they'll even send it to me and it's still got red lines on it because they've shared it with everybody in their team. Why do you think that's a good thing to have it to begin with before you even give it to a recruiter or an HR partner to go source the position?
Yeah. I mean, job descriptions are really, they're building blocks for so much in HR. Like, of course, they define what the job is, gets everybody on the same page about what you're looking for, helps to make sure you're assessing by the correct criteria. It also reduces bias if you have, if you have criteria set that are, that you can hold all candidates to. But it also helps you determine how much you're going to pay that person. How, you know, what would we be willing to pay a candidate? It helps to create interview questions. It even after hire, it attracts the right candidates who have the right skill set and want the job that you're advertising. But even after hire, it's used to hold people accountable for performance and the expectations of their job. It can be really important in a lot of compliance activities. So
that's a big
one. If you have somebody who needs some type of accommodation, it's important to be able to say, well, these are the essential duties of this job that we need you to be able to perform with or without some kind of accommodation. It determines if the job is going to be exempt from overtime or if they're going to be required to be paid overtime. It impacts so much. And I know. Regardless of the format, having a definition of what the job is makes so much of your life easier as an employer.
I agree. And I know it's a pain in the rear end to build one from scratch, which is why we do it for our clients. We build a job description for every job we post. But it's important because even from the beginning part, it is that upfront work, but you're right. It just makes the whole rest of the process flow so smoothly. As you said, even whenever the individual is hired, being able to hold them accountable for the job description that they applied to. But up front, what I love about it, and we've worked with some large teams, they'll say, hey, I need 15 CRAs. Okay, well, I can give you a basic CRA job description, but I need to make sure that your three or four hiring managers or your clinical ops lead and your line manager, you know, the people that are responsible for different parts of your projects are all in alignment with what you're looking for. Because if Angela says, I want somebody with this, and this is the only person that wrote the job description, when I send that resume over to Becky for review, Becky be like, this person does not meet any of my requirements, right? So the job description forces the team, if done properly, it forces the team to collaborate and to come up with some type of a foundational, this is what I'm looking for mantra, which is a really good starting point as you go through the process.
Yeah, I agree. And some of it does require some translation. Like, you might have a well-defined job description with qualifications that are outlined in there that kind of set the baseline for, on paper, here's what we need to see in a candidate. Right. But then there's also kind of translating those to competencies. Like, what do we need to be able to this person to achieve in this job, right, in order to meet the requirements of the position? And then how do we ask questions that get to that?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Which takes you to that perspective of, once you have that well-defined job description, there's two things we do with our job descriptions. The first thing we do is we come up with a pre-screening qualification questionnaire. So, you know, so this is the how many years you've done it questions, mm-hmm, that you should not waste your time on the phone with somebody about, you know, how many years of this and how many years of that and, you know, whatever. So it helps you with that pre-screening, because to your point, we're not talking competency now. We're talking about years of service in certain capacities or roles or, you know, whatever.
Therapeutics, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. And so it gives you your pre-screening. And I think there's a lot of companies that don't do pre-screening, which I think is silly, because you end up just having phone conversations with people who may not meet your minimum. And now you're spending all of your time on the phone saying, well, how many years of oncology and what were your indications? And instead of saying, what were the endpoints of that study and what were your challenges, and tell me, you know, you can do, which brings me to the second part, which is what you're talking about, is now take that job description and create a competency-based interview that helps with behavioral questions and really being able to dig into, okay, you say you've got 10 years experience in oncology, let's talk about that. Tell me about your most challenging projects or your this, that. It helps you to then build off of that, and you can build those straight from the job description, and it helps you then, when you're looking across 100 people that have applied for your job, you can now do an apples to apples comparison based off of their responses, which makes you compliant if anyone decides to sue you later for not considering their candidacy, right?
Yep. Reduces bias, gives you a set apples to apples comparison. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And evaluating competitiveness too, because a lot of times there's a job description that says these are the necessaries, and we've got lots of folks that meet those qualifications, but then sometimes getting on the same page about what's necessary, but then what are the extras? What are the bonus things? You know, it would be so great if this candidate had some risk-based monitoring experience, or maybe they've done NIH studies, or maybe they have this other side, you know, specialty indication that we might have a study for in the future to utilize them down the road. You know, we want to onboard somebody that maybe has this extra. So being on the same page, I feel like from the get-go, you can evaluate even the extras, the bonuses that would make them more competitive and would help you really want to get excited about this candidate over that candidate, even above and beyond the basics.
I agree with that.
What do you think the job description does for the candidate, Ruth?
What does it do for them?
Yeah, I mean, if they're applying for jobs, right? I mean, what do you think the candidate's looking for? A good candidate.
In a job posting? I mean, I think it looks for the right candidate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a right type of candidate for the job that you have open. And being transparent about what that job is actually going to look like, both in the job posting and during the interview process. So, you know, here's the good, but also here are the challenges that you'd face in this role. There's a lot of value in that, because it does allow employees who will either not be successful or will hate that job to opt out. And although that can reduce your candidate pool, it's valuable to reduce it in that way, because it saves you time in the short term in the interview process, but it also saves you a lot of time and money if that person starts and then hates the job.
Right.
So I'm big on transparency. I mean, you don't want to go in saying, like, here's all the things that I hate about this company or that you're going to hate, but let them know what to expect. Cause that's only going to help you in the long run.
Well, that reminds me of a situation we had, a while back where, you know, the position wasn't including site management responsibilities. There were visits and all this, and we're seeing this a lot as a trend with some companies that are taking their site management piece more in-house, and the CRAs are just doing visits, right? They're not doing all the in-between and the follow-up and really getting to nurture those relationships. And some CRAs really like that. They like to have the end-to-end. They like to know why. They like to be able to be the person that's following up and have the whole big picture of that. And they like cultivating those relationships and they're good at it. And so if your job, and I'm thinking in the CRA world in particular, isn't necessarily the basics, if it's, you know, old school, I think we've talked with other people in the past where that was all wrapped up in the job, not necessarily anymore. So if there are those bits and pieces, you want to make sure the candidate is prepared with, is this kind of the right fit for me? What pieces of the job do I really love to do? Does this have those there? Because you want to make sure that you don't have that attrition. If it's what they really want and it aligns with what you need, then that's the best match.
Yeah. Agreed. And I have definitely talked to CRAs who love not having site management responsibilities.
Sure. So yeah, find the ones that don't and put them in the job.
Right. Yeah. It's the culture fit too. You know, there's all that piece too that you can communicate in a job description in subtle ways.
Yeah, well, and I think it's hard to articulate culture in a job description, but I do see a lot of companies leave out that top part, which I think is really important, where you talk about the company. Because I think, you know, a company that is devising products and is a startup has completely different culture than a company that has products on the market and they've hit their stride and they're stable, you know, and or a company that's building a team to do something, you know, going in, they're going to be storming and forming. So can you handle that? Right. So there's all of this other aspects of it to where when you really start thinking about what culture do I really excel in? Am I a steady state person or am I one of those people that love creating? Because then you get that feeling if the company's real smart about writing that top part, it's not just, hey, I was founded in this date and that. I'm saying, where are you as a company? Where is this team? And what are you trying to accomplish in this role so that the people that really know what they're looking for and they know they excel in a creative experience versus a steady stater or whatever, they'll now be more attracted to the job description and the company, which will also attract you better quality and better fitting type of candidates.
Yeah. And that's not necessarily a component of like an internal job description, but is something that's worth investing in as a, you know, for employment branding. Here's who we are. Here's the value proposition that we're offering to you if you are selected and you select us for this job. I think that's really valuable to invest in as a company, kind of across the here's who we are on our website, like having a good story of not just for clients, but here's who we are as an employer. There's a, you know, some companies don't have that built out very much. Yeah. And I know that candidates look at that and care about it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And we talk all the time about the fact that when we're looking at a candidate's resume, we want to see their story. But I think if I'm a good quality candidate, I want to look at the company and see their story. You know, I want to know where they've been, where they are and where they're going. And I want to know if I join that team that I'm more than just a number and I'm going to be a part of something. And so candidates really should be looking at job descriptions that way. You know, I mean, you're always going to have your drifters, your people that are just apply for everything. You're going to have all of that. Those are easier to weed out with a buttoned up job description. But we're talking about the good quality team members that you want to attract to your team because there's something in that job description that really resonates with them.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys. So what would you not want to include in a job description? We've talked about all the wonderful things to have on there. Is there anything that we would particularly not want to have on there on purpose?
And by job description, do you mean an internal job description or do you mean a job posting?
A post. Yeah. But which would have the job description components, but more of a post.
Sure. Okay. I do think that there's going to be likely more information on an internal job description than there will be on a job posting. Just because some of the job descriptions go into a lot of detail because they are used for those kind of after hire pieces like compliance and things like that. And I'm trying to think of what specifically might be left out. you might generalize information, like you might not go into all of the system requirements and, you know, whether they'll be sitting or standing or things like that quite as much. But I do think that you want to cover that in some way in the job posting, if that's something that you're going to use to qualify candidates.
Right.
So I don't know. Can you think of anything, Angela?
I think I want to talk to you about whether or not you think compensation should be included. But if you take that out, I think one of the things, if you start talking about compliance, one of the things that I think a lot of companies don't understand is that job description is not a legal document, but it is kind of a contract in a way. It's an agreement amongst gentlemen or gentlewomen that this is what you've said this job is all about, and this is what I've signed up for. So you have, while you want to provide details, it also behooves you not to provide too many details, because there's that balance, right? To where, and that's why I think a lot of posts and job descriptions have other duties as assigned, or the general, this general, whatever, you know, so there is that too. It's where, you know, you do have to have it buttoned up, but you also have to think about the spirit of the posting versus it, you know, being so contractual and bland that now it could come back to bite you in the backside. Because if you're going to use that to hold someone accountable for their performance later, if things are missing, you can't hold someone accountable for it unless you have now added it to their personal improvement plan or their career path plan or whatever it is that you're trying to do internally, or vice versa. So you just got to make sure you got to be a little buttoned up about that. Too much detail can be a bad thing.
I think that's true for essential responsibilities, so like the primary responsibilities of the job. I have never seen a job where there aren't going to be things that come up that you need to do that aren't explicitly laid out in a job description. And that is normal. Like, I do think that any company needs that flexibility in order to operate, because there's going to be things that happen that we might need to ask someone to do something that it's not their normal responsibility. If it becomes their normal responsibility, I think we need to update the job description.
Right.
But there's always going to be this one off. So that other duties as assigned, I very much think that that's important to include.
I think so too. And then there's always the other, I mean, we talked about compliance, but I wonder if our audience knows exactly what that means. I mean, when you're writing a job description, what do you think compliance means?
Yeah. So the two big things that come to mind, one is ensuring you're compliant with the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is the act that determines how employees should be paid and protects them. And the big component that tends to be a big focus in HR is that employee eligible for overtime? And there are defined exemptions that you could say that this position meets these exemption requirements, and so this position will be paid a salary and is not eligible for overtime. And so really defining what the job is and ensuring that it aligns with one of those exemptions is important if you're going to be saying that the job is not eligible to receive overtime.
Right. Salary versus hourly versus, and if it's contract, whether it can be a W-2 or a 1099. It's an employment classification in general.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And the other piece really is there's a lot of laws that kind of allow that protect employees. Two big ones are the Family and Medical Leave Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act. There's also some new regulations that have come out related to pregnant and postpartum employees going through postpartum. And so in order to assess the company's responsibility to accommodate those employees' needs, whether it's with a leave of absence or to give them a different schedule or provide a different system or tool for the employee to do their job, you have to really be able to define what are the essential duties of this job that we need this person to be able to perform, and what changes are reasonable for us to make in order to allow them to perform those essential duties. Right. So even if somebody's asking for an accommodation, it's not going to be that we aren't going to require them to do one of their essential duties. It's what can we do to support you to allow you to do those essential duties. And so having them defined is important so that we're applying them consistently and not asking one person to do something that we're not asking another person to do in that job.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it ensures equity.
Sure. And I guess there are situations to where someone needs, you know, something has happened and they need some type of an accommodation. But does that mean that if they now there's no way to give them an accommodation in order for them to perform their essential duties, that means that they can no longer keep that job? Is that what that means?
It depends. Mm-hmm. It depends on what is reasonable for that company.
Okay.
It could depend on their financial position. It could depend on what other accommodations are an option. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could be looking at other similar positions that don't have the same essential responsibilities.
So shifting their role,
internally,
perhaps.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. It depends on what's available. But there's a pretty substantial interactive process that's required to kind of explore all of that with the employee to see what their where they have flexibility, what other options they have that could work for them, and what the possibilities are that the company has to offer that are reasonable.
Wow.
Yeah.
So all the more reason to have a very well buttoned up job description.
Definitely.
That definitely helps.
Because it protects the company, but it protects the employees too. So candidates, you guys need to make sure you're looking at the maturity of the job description, right? I mean, if you're serious about your career and what you're trying to accomplish, makes a big difference. So what do you think about compensation? Do you
I was going to ask that question.
Sorry, Becky, I took your thunder.
No, please. I wanted to make sure we snuck that in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we used to provide compensation and then we don't now because all we do is, you know, recruit CRAs, or at least that's our predominant role. And the range is the range is the range, right? But what we found whenever we included the compensation is that it ruled some people out because they might have thought that maybe it's too little or too much and they don't want to negotiate or they don't whatever. But then on the flip side, people who are really underqualified want the max number and now you got that to deal with. And I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
So I think the biggest factor to consider is where are you recruiting these candidates? Because many states have been putting pay equity laws in place that require a pay range to be included in the job description.
Really?
Or in the job posting.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah. Okay. And it's, some of them aren't active yet, but I think that that's a growing trend. So if you're looking for employees and you're open to candidates in those states, and I can't remember them off the top of my head right now. I feel like Nebraska was one. but it's a growing trend. And so I am in favor of moving in that direction, sharing pay information. I am seeing it more and more on job postings, even for companies that are recruiting locally. I'm in North Carolina. I know North Carolina is not a place where that's required. So if you're just recruiting somebody to be on site in a North Carolina location, you don't need to include it. But, because it's becoming more and more of the trend, I know, and when I looked for positions fairly recently, I was looking for pay in those job postings and was more likely to apply to a position where I knew the pay would meet my expectations than one where I didn't know what it would look like. Because, you know, it takes a lot of time to apply to jobs.
I know, especially if they're requiring you to put all your information into their systems, you know, so you know, there is that too. Yeah, that's really good information. Does that apply to 1099 consultant rates too, or are we looking more for employee, just W-2s?
I think that that's, I'm only aware of it on the employee side, but I don't know on the contract side. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a really good thing because, again, now we're back to compliance. Right. And, you know, I remember, and I know Becky's got her hand up, so it's probably about time to wrap up, but I remember I was researching something eons ago and about an article that I was writing and I ran across, and it might've been Napoleon Hill that actually wrote this. And what he talked about is the fact that someone that he knew did an exercise to where they did two identical job posts. One job post had like a pay range, and I'm just going to throw a number out, but let's say that the pay range for the job post was between 60 and 80 grand a year. Okay. The other job post that was identical stated that it was going to be between 100 and 130 grand a year.
Okay.
And that out of all of the applicants, 80% of them applied to the 60 to 80 grand versus the 100 to 130 grand. Same exact job post.
Now, do you think that the candidates was okay? So the requirements were the same?
Yeah, absolutely identical. Now, I wonder, because this would have been Napoleon Hill days, right? So we're talking about early 1900s, right? I mean, or, you know, early to mid 1900s. But I'm wondering if that is a sign of whether it's a candidate-driven market, an employer-driven market, if it, you know, what exactly, is there something going on with, you know, whatever? Because you got two job descriptions side by side, and I'm looking at both of them, and I'm thinking, I only deserve this. I mean, is that what's going on? It's just a curious, curious. It kind of relates or it doesn't, but I'm just curious. And that is one of the things that's always kind of plagued my head is when you put that out there, am I missing out on candidates that might apply? If you know what I mean? Or alternatively, you just said you didn't apply for jobs because they didn't have it listed. So I guess you'd be kind of missing out either way, right?
Right. And I mean, logic would tell us that people would apply if the pay range was higher, but right? That clearly tells us that's not the case.
Well, part of what I was thinking when you were saying that, Angela, is I wonder if people evaluate their competitiveness compared to others that might apply. So like for me, I know in the past, if I read a job description and I'm like, I definitely am not necessarily overqualified, but I've got all the requirements and I've got all the bonuses, I am more likely to apply because I think my odds of getting it are higher. And maybe they think their odds of getting it, if it's at the lower rate, if they match all the qualifications, that maybe their odds are higher that they're willing to accept if they're in the pool of people that are definitely qualified, and at the lower rate that they'll be more willing or more likely to get to secure the position. I wonder if they'd feel less competitive at the higher rate, not that they don't deserve it, but that maybe they just wouldn't get picked. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to do that. It'd be interesting to do that test now.
Yeah.
And to
I mean,
see
my
if
advice to candidates is apply to both.
Exactly. Why should you apply to both? Thank you.
I love
why
that.
Not? Oh, that's so interesting.
Let's end on that note. Apply to both. Apply to everything. Yeah, definitely. I really love this conversation. I think there's so much good meat in this podcast. Ruth, I cannot thank you enough for joining us and giving us this perspective. It was so helpful. Please come back.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it really was good to see you again. I'm glad you're doing well. And thank you so much for your time today, your expertise.
Thank you. I hope you have the rest of your day.
Thank you. And thank you, Angela, for joining us too. Thanks to everybody out there listening at CRE Resources. We understand you have so many options when it comes to selecting which clinical recruiting company to partner with. Not only do we take pride in working with the highest quality CRAs and site managers, we also only work with quality pharmas, biotechs, medical device companies, and CROs who recognize the importance and value of a CRA's role. So feel free to reach out at creresources.com for more information about our firm. We can't wait to work with you.